Sunday, June 24th, 2018. Welcome to the Daily Wrap-Up, a concise show dedicated to bringing you the most relevant independent news as we see it from the last 24 hours. Well, I want to begin today by throwing out a couple of videos that I want you all to go check out, both of which I considered actually involving in the show today, which, I mean, they're both of them do tie in with a lot of the things I talk about on a regular basis, as well as even plenty of things I'm going to get into today. But both of which are so chock full of excellent information, both very well done and very thorough, but I didn't want to do them injustice by simply giving you bullet points. I want you to go and check these out for yourself, done by two excellent journalists. One is from James Corbett, the other one is from Really Graceful, and they're both fantastic videos. The first one is from Really Graceful, entitled What the Media Won't Tell You About China. And it is a fantastic video that even enlightened me on a lot of different topics that even that I thought that I generally understood, and things that really get into not just what we're not understanding about China today and how it plays in with the dynamics we're seeing in place, but how it dates back to the beginning of not just China, but the larger concept of a lot of these countries that were victims of Western imperialism well before the United States was ever established. And, you know, she touches on the opium wars in regard to China and how Britain basically used opium as a tool to manipulate China from a time when they were very, you know, you could argue whether there was a lot of war, but as she makes the point, arguably very moral in a sense and strived to be decent in a lot of ways, and then just drove them into chaos so that they could be manipulated for trade purposes. And obviously this is one side of the argument. There's a lot of information here, but this video is so well done and really gets into just the efforts of using Western imperialism as a weapon and using it to destabilize nations for selfish agendas and much, much more, which is why I'd rather you just go watch the video for yourself. And if you're unfamiliar with her work, Really Graceful does an excellent job of really breaking down some topics that people may not understand. One I've talked about in the past was about Zionism and the truth behind it. I highly recommend you check out her work and go support her. Fantastic job. And the next one I wanted to talk about, many of our viewers probably have already seen, is one recent from James Corbett called Bayer plus Monsanto equals a match made in hell. You can probably understand and grasp what that video is about, but it gets into a concept that a deeper concept about around Monsanto and Bayer that many people don't really understand. The real actually evil aspects behind both of these companies. And a few of the key points that I think are important to understand is one, for instance, Bayer is a company that verifiably, demonstrably is 100% responsible for essentially infecting hundreds of thousands of people with HIV through anticoagulant drugs that they put out, verifiably so. And then once that was found out, went on to sell it to third world nations and infect them as well, which you could, there's a whole other conversation to have about whether that was involved in this spread of HIV around the world that we then use as another excuse to lob at these third world countries, the fact that they're just any number of terrible things people want to say about them. But the point is that they did that verifiably, knew that would happen, did it anyway. This is the company merging with Monsanto, which, as we know, is an agrochemical company, or rather just a chemical company that's forced its way into the food aspect of the world, which now generally controls a vast portion of the world's food supply. You know, talking about GMOs, Agent Orange, I mean, all these horrific things that we know of their past. And I mean, I don't want to get off on a tangent here. Monsanto is pretty damn evil, and I think you all are pretty aware of the things that they've done. I'll put some stuff in the show notes, but this video does an excellent job of giving you the timeline, understanding what's really going on there, and why their connection together is a horrific thing for the future of our planet and our food supply and many number of things. So please go check out that. If you don't already support James Corbett, I highly recommend you do so. Please go do so. So for the first story of the day, coming from ZeroHedge.com, in surprising turn, U.S. sends farewell message to proxies in Syria's south. There's been a very interesting development in southern Syria, where the Syrian army and allied forces are engaged in a major offensive to take back its own territory from long-entrenched FSA, al-Qaeda, and ISIS groups that have continually been ignored by the United States, protected even despite U.S. claims that the sole purpose of its ongoing illegal occupation in Syria is the annihilation of those very groups. Contradiction we have to continue to recognize. Though we have noted that this massive final battle to solidify Assad's hold over key areas bordering Jordan and the Israeli-occupied Golan Heights could trigger U.S.-Israeli intervention, consistent with recent threats from the United States State Department, it now appears that Washington has essentially changed its tune. Apparently, Washington has now told rebel groups in southern Syria that the U.S. has spent years backing that they should not expect American military intervention on their behalf. Though the State Department has continued its public threats that the U.S. will take firm and appropriate measures against Damascus should its military campaign continue, it appears Washington has washed its hands of the Southern Front militants that it helped to create, essentially now telling them that they're on their own. But I find that to be an absurd contradiction in and of itself, that they're still threatening firm and appropriate action should you attack these people, yet telling the people that they're about to attack that we won't help you fight them. Something is off there, as we'll get to in a second, but clearly there's a contradiction there. The message was reportedly sent from the U.S. Embassy in Amman to anti-Assad commanders currently under attack from Syrian government air and ground forces. United States said, quote, "We in the United States government understand the difficult conditions you are facing and still advise the Russians and the Syrian regime not to undertake a military measure that violates the zone. But we need to clarify our position. We understand you need to make your decision based on your interests and the interest of your families and faction," which is interesting. These are basically extremist terrorist groups. The families and faction aspect, I think, is intentionally meant to give them that look of just normalcy. And it says, as you see them, you should not base your decision on the assumption or expectation of military intervention by us. Very clearly saying that you do what you need to do, but don't expect us to come help you. Now, regardless, the Pentagon still maintains over a dozen forward operating bases in Syria's north and east, including some 2,000 or more reported U.S. soldiers and advisors bolstering Kurdish-dominated Syrian Democratic Forces, the YPG. Interesting there, because that plays in a lot with what Turkey's constantly angry about, the fact that the U.S. is continuing to support the YPG, even though they seem to have tried to separate themselves from the Kurds in general. The point being that there's a lot of U.S. military personnel, I would argue well more than 2,000, this is what we can see, still within Syria. This is all directed specifically at the Southern Front, which, interestingly enough, was exactly where they threatened Syria not to move into, but yet they're pulling back. There's a lot of interesting stuff happening here. President Assad has repeatedly vowed to retake every inch of sovereign Syrian territory. So that applies to north and east and all the areas that are currently occupied by Turkey and United States and all the different places and the Kurds all occupying Syrian territory. Now, the author rightly notes, and this is also where my mind immediately went when first hearing this news, one constant and observable pattern when it comes to U.S. intervention in Syria, however, has been that whenever U.S. leadership declares withdrawal from Syria operations, the rebels claim a chemical attack or other highly visible mass atrocity perpetuated by the Syrian government against civilians, supposedly. The other possibility and great unknown when it comes to the battle for southern Syria is that the U.S. could give Israel a green light to launch further attacks on Syria. So the important information to take away from this, and this is, again, exactly where my mind went with this, is that despite them saying that they're not going to back them, doesn't mean that there's not going to back them. I mean, it could just be a political move. We've seen a lot of this misinformation flying around. And as they pointed out very clearly, that every single time in the past they pretended to pull out or announced that they were about to pull out, oh, we're on a chemical attack and we can't now. We have to stay and support the civilians, even though it's been very clearly shown by many different people that specifically the last one in Douma never even took place. So this, and we've already seen people continuing to say that they're planning it, that U.S. personnel specifically are basically creating a setting to carry out another pretend event or stage a false flag. We already have these warnings. So this could just be the setup for this exact same thing to make it seem like the U.S. is trying to distance themselves and then, oh, force back in because of a moral obligation, which is what happens every time. But then the other point they make is that it could simply be a way to sidestep into giving more responsibility for the ongoing operation that's already a joint operation with France and U.S. and Israel and all these different coordinated efforts more to Israel. Clearly, I don't think we're going to see any actual pullback here. I mean, if the United States just pulled out of Syria today, it would be a huge, massive failure on their part. And that's kind of the reason why people say they remain in places like Afghanistan. As long as they can say that it's still ongoing, they haven't technically failed. So the 17-year war in Afghanistan hasn't ended yet, so they haven't technically failed. It's still ongoing. It's like, that's this ridiculous concept in their minds. But we'll see what happens. I mean, this, if they do pull back, that's a positive step, I would imagine. But I really don't think we're going to see it take place. I mean, realistically, the bottom line is that Assad has every right to take back all of his sovereign territory, and no one has any right to stop him. We'll keep track of this and let you know what comes about. Moving on to the next story, coming from LibertyBlitzkrieg.com, Congress to give Jeff Sessions more power to ban whatever substance he doesn't like. Now, this is a very alarming story, and the way this is progressing shouldn't surprise us after seeing what Jeff Sessions has been doing to this point. Clearly has absolutely no regard for what Americans actually want, for what the facts actually say. He is just this old school politician that's like, this is what I think, and this is what's going to happen. And it's like, it's pretty alarming. I mean, he's made that pretty damn clear. We've seen this in regard to his ridiculous stance against marijuana and just rolling back all of these marijuana rights as far as the states. I mean, really just superseding states' rights, which is an unconstitutional act to begin with. But we've seen this in regard to cannabis just all ever since he's come into power. And it's been very, very alarming. Even talking about the death penalty for extreme cases in regard to marijuana, and even death penalty in regard to any kind of a drug offense is absurd. It's a nonviolent crime. I mean, you could make connections to violent crimes in regard to drug trafficking, but to even consider the death penalty for a nonviolent crime is horrific. I mean, this doesn't happen in the United States. This is something that happens in Saudi Arabia and the Philippines. But clearly now it's on the books for them. If they chose to and enforce this law, they could put extreme cases, they claim, for these drugs, even in cannabis, they could put people to death. That's currently part of their laws. But this is a very alarming case, and it's something that is, I would argue, is we're going to see move forward unless people like us continue to stand up and speak out, just like we saw in regard to Kratom, where people were like, okay, this cannot happen. And they got such an overwhelming show of force from the people that they had to take a step back. But I think that's exactly what this kind of thing is meant to combat. Maybe hoping that people don't pay attention to this, or really just to give them a way around what the people want. Now, Congress is essentially salivating at the prospect of furthering this travesty of the war on drugs by giving additional discretion to drug war crazed loon Attorney General Jeff Sessions. A bill passed by the House would create a fast-track scheduling system that would lead to the criminalization of Kratom, nootropics, and pretty much anything that gives you a buzz and isn't already illegal, which is very frustrating to understand that this is not even... This goes well beyond what is harmful, right? And we've talked about this many times. It's about control. It's about things that counter industries they're already deeply involved in. And specifically when it comes to someone like Jeff Sessions, how he's got deep ties to the prison industrial complex. So finding more ways to send more people to jail for nonviolent crimes. The House of Representatives voted on Friday to create a new schedule of banned drugs under the Controlled Substances Act, called Schedule A, and to give Attorney General Jeff Sessions broad new powers to criminalize the manufacturing, importation, and sale of substances that are currently unregulated but not illegal, which is unconstitutional, as I always point out. The fact that they can tell us what we can and can't do with our own body while we're not harming anybody else and the safety of our own home is blatantly unconstitutional, but we're well past that point for a long time now. The bill is now headed to the Senate, where co-sponsors Dianne Feinstein and Chuck Grassley will likely have little problem whipping votes. It's apparently called the Stop the Importation and Trafficking of Synthetic Analogs Act, or CITSA, is intended to crack down on drugs that closely resemble currently banned or regulated substances in either their chemical structure or intended effects. So just anything that makes you feel good is apparently a problem for them, which is just absurd. Of course, unless that's alcohol or something that they already have money tied up in, even though we can verifiably show that alcohol is by far more damaging to your body than just about most illegal drugs today. You'd be surprised. Even something like heroin, you'd be surprised that alcohol is, there's been studies that have shown, but there was a study done by Professor David Nutt in the UK, and he came out with this study a while back that very clearly showed that alcohol was by far worse for you than heroin. And not only was he fired from his job, his research was suppressed, and this was back before this was a very recognizable topic. Now, today, it's pretty well established, even though many people don't even recognize that or are aware of that fact. There's a lot of recent studies that show you how bad alcohol is for your body, but it's allowed because that's just the way things are. We're wildly hypocritical in a lot of different ways, but because people have so much money invested in alcohol, it's okay. Alcohol everywhere. People can drink it. It's every single party you go to. Yet you talk about something like cannabis, and oh my God, you're a criminal, right? It's ridiculous. But so we're talking about this banning substances just because they make you feel good. There's not even any science behind it. As we've shown many times about kratom, that there is no science behind this fear that it's somehow harmful to you. Even actually plenty of science to demonstrate the exact opposite. And even if it was, which is not, the numbers of people who die on a regular basis from cigarettes and alcohol are astronomical, or even opiates that we sell on a regular basis under the guise that they're prescribed to you. But this is, I'm getting on a tangent here, but the point is that this is designed to take away things that combat the problems that are already in place that they're profiting from, whether that they're harmful or not, right? Just, it says either their chemical structure or intended effects. So just because something makes you feel like something else, they're going to try to ban this. It's pretty obvious once you break it down. SISTA would also empower the Attorney General to add drugs to this new schedule with few checks from other branches of government. The Senate version of SISTA introduced by Feinstein and Grassley gives the Attorney General unilateral and unchecked power to add a substance to Schedule A. It contains no congressional review provision and vests no authority in the Department of Health and Human Services to challenge the DOJ's scheduling decision, essentially giving Jeff Sessions, this drug war maniac, the ability to just simply arbitrarily make things legal without any other people being involved. So regardless of what the people want, which he's already demonstrated, he can very clearly make these things illegal. This is a horrifying step and something we really have to try to stop. But I honestly don't think we're going to be able to, but it's definitely something you should reach out to your local legislators and say something about. But something like kratom, which is so important to understand, there are massive benefits to this, to discussing in particular about weaning people off of the opiate addiction, which I think is a huge factor. Despite all of the rhetoric from the government, everything's continued to get dramatically worse. And kratom has a very specific ability to wean people off of these. So does cannabis. So go figure, why do they want these to be illegal? And there's absolutely zero deaths associated with kratom, despite all the nonsensical lies they throw out, which have disproven many, many times. And it's also important to understand that when you're talking about legalization of drugs in general, that every single time, cannabis specifically, in every single state that cannabis has been legalized, crime has dropped dramatically, like 10 to 15%. It just because it's legalized, because it drives out the illegal aspects. These crime circles profit, just like we saw in Prohibition, due to the fact that they're illegalized. And that's entirely the point. The prison aspect, I mean, there's all these different layers to all of this. The point is, they want to keep the status quo because they profit from it and they can control it. With these kind of things that you can grow in your backyard, they can't continue to poison you with all of their pharmaceuticals, and they can't continue to manipulate you and threaten you with prison. So it's we have to see what this is meant to do. And it's in a very alarming aspect here. And it's also very interesting to know, as the article pointed out, that this two-party lie nonsense, that essentially these people are saying constantly that Sessions is evil and bad, and he's part of the Trump administration, but oh, here, give him more power to do whatever he wants. Same thing with Donald Trump. that Trump is this evil person, we should impeach him, and he's terrible, but here's all the military power to do whatever you want in the world. Here's all the surveillance power to do whatever you want in the world. It's just ridiculous. This two-party lie, as I said in the beginning, is something we have to begin to see past, because it is a ridiculous joke that they use to control you while they continue all the same agendas on both sides of the aisle. Moving on to the next story, coming from ZeroHedge.com. Here's 21 trillion reasons to question the role of government in America. This is an excellent article that kind of combines a few different articles. One that was actually posted by Ron Paul, and the other that's discussed by Lee Camp on Truthdig. And it's very interesting. It's a topic we've discussed before, many times, in fact. The concept of the unaccounted for $21 trillion that from the Pentagon, that also just so happens to be the exact amount of our current national debt, which I've pointed out in the past. But this article does a very interesting way, has an interesting way of kind of combining the information and addressing a few interesting points that I haven't actually done in discussing this topic. But it's a great article. And as always, I recommend you read all of these for yourself and come to your own conclusions. But this one specifically, I wanted to run down some of the points they made because it's very interesting. And obviously, Lee Camp always has his very humorous edge to this, which makes him very entertaining to read. But the first part, as Ron Paul notes, the U.S. military budget dwarfs every other country on the planet combined, which is astounding when you think about it, especially when we continue to say that we need more military spending to fight off other threats, which is just absurd with that much spending. And he says, the role of government must seriously be reconsidered in America. Without being technically at war with anyone in particular, the U.S. is dropping a bomb somewhere in the world every 12 minutes around the clock. The U.S. has 1,000 military bases scattered across the planet. I would argue probably more than that. Congress not only doesn't declare war as they're required to by the U.S. Constitution, but they're surprised to find out that American troops are peppered throughout Africa as well. The role of government must seriously be reconsidered in America. Peace, non-intervention in the affairs of foreign nations, free trade, travel. These are principles that have long been gone. It's time to revive them. And I absolutely agree. I always agree with Ron Paul's general sentiment about the way our foreign policy should be conducted. In a way, just kind of what Donald Trump pretended he was trying to do before he got elected, but is now doing the exact opposite. But very clear points made there and stuff that we've talked about in the past. Then the article goes on to get into Lee Camp's point of this entire thing, which I thought was very important. And essentially that it's kind of impossible for the human mind to really grasp and comprehend what $21 trillion actually means. And it's a very interesting point to really take a moment and think about, that we know the number, but it's such a large number that it's intangible. We have no idea what that actually comes to. And there's some very interesting points he makes here. Now, he says in his typically hilarious fashion, trying to understand, truly understand, that the Pentagon spent $21 trillion unaccounted for dollars between 1998 and 2015 watches over us like your mother telling you that your third cousin you met twice is getting divorced. It seems vaguely upsetting, but you forget about it 15 seconds later because what else is there to do? Which is because a perfect point to make, because it really is like that. It's like, oh my God, $21 trillion. Okay, like that's, you know, it's like you just move past it. But that's a horrifying number when you really understand it. And this is the reason that we move past it. And this is the point he makes. He says, let's stop and take a second to conceive how much $21 trillion is. And he says, which you can't because our brain's short circuit, but we'll try anyway. And these stats are pretty crazy. It says the amount of money supposedly in the stock market is $30 trillion, which is actually not necessarily correct. He's made this point before that it's supposedly $30 trillion, but that's kind of a phantom number. But nonetheless, 30 trillion, when we're talking about 21 trillion, the GDP of the United States is only 18.6 trillion, the entire GDP of the United States. And he goes on to say, picture a stack of money. Now imagine that stack of dollars is all $1,000 bills. Each bill says $1,000 on it. How high do you imagine that stack of dollars would be if it were 1 trillion? Just 1 trillion. It would be 63 miles high. It's just beyond our comprehension. Now it says, imagine you make $40,000 a year. How long would it take you to make $1 trillion? Well, don't sign up for this task because it would take you 25 million years, which sounds like a long time, but I hear the last 10 million really fly by because you already know your way around the office and where the coffee machine is, etc. I love his style of humor, which is so important, actually, because using humor to get these points across, it's very powerful. It does actually do a lot to get people to remember these things and take them in. But think about that. It would take you 25 million years making $40,000 a year to make $1 trillion. Just one. It's crazy. Again, showing you more so than actually understanding it, that 21 trillion is just beyond our comprehension. Then he goes on to note that 21 trillion number comes from the Department of Defense Office of Inspector General, the OIG, except that after inquiries began about the OIG reported unsubstantiated adjustments, the OIG's webpage, which documented these unsupported accounting adjustments, was mysteriously taken down. Very interesting. I think we know exactly why that was, but that's a very insightful thing to understand. And he says, luckily, people have already grabbed copies of the report, which we now have, and I'll have that included in the show notes for you to check out. He goes on to note that the unaccounted for expenses were 54 times the actual budget allotted by Congress. 54 times. Think about that. And he goes on to say, well, it's good to see Congress is doing 1/54th of its job of overseeing military spending. He says, that's actually more than I thought Congress was doing. And it would seem that that means that 98% of every dollar spent by the Army in 2015 alone was unconstitutional. 98%. So we have to really comprehend what that means, that they're spending so much more money than they're even allowed to, and it's not discussed. This is not discussed by the mainstream media. It's not discussed by Congress. This just continually goes on. You have to ask ourselves why that is. There's clearly a force, a presence here that stops them from doing so. Whether they have just complete control over the media or the people that control the media, they clearly have control over most of Congress. Otherwise, this would be a discussion point. Why that their jobs just simply no longer matter. That they can just do so much outside of their what they're supposed to be doing, and yet Congress just sits back and allows it to happen. That's an alarming prospect. Essentially, they just print however much money they need whenever they need it, rapidly diminishing the worth of U.S. currency to secretly fund wars of aggression. Or rather, I guess, not so secretly anymore. They just seem to no longer care that we know. This means that any time our government says it doesn't have enough money for a project, it's absurd. It can clearly create as much as it wants for bombing and death. This would explain how Donald Trump's military can drop about 121 bombs a day that cost well north of $1 million each. That's one every 12 minutes, in fact, while not being officially at war with anyone. So why can't our governments also create endless money for healthcare, education, the homeless problem, veterans benefits, and the elderly? Obviously, the government could do these things. It simply chooses not to. Just as we recently discussed, the UN report by Professor Philip Alston that found very clearly that the ongoing issue of extreme poverty and inequality within the United States is a choice by those in power. He literally said, quote, at the end of the day, particularly in a rich country like the USA, the persistence of extreme poverty is a political choice made by those in power. With political will, it could readily be eliminated. A very well-respected gentleman who carried out this report, and this was, I mean, I've talked about this in the past, but it's a choice to not use the money that they print out of nowhere to help people in their own country, but rather to wage war around the world. In fact, back in May, as he points out, Louisiana sent eviction notices to 30,000 elderly people on Medicaid to kick them out of their nursing homes. A country that can create trillions of dollars out of nowhere and throw it down a black hole marked military can't find the money to take care of poor elderly people. That has to be absolutely horrifying to us when we can see how easily they spend the money here, yet can't find a fraction of it to help their own people. Former Secretary of Defense Robert Gates spoke about how no one essentially knows where the money is flying in the Pentagon. In a barely reported speech in 2011, he said, quote, my staff and I learned that it was nearly impossible to get accurate information and answers to questions such as, how much money did you spend? And how many people do you have? So they can't even find out how many people work in a specific department within the government. I mean, think about that. The Secretary of Defense can't even actually find out how much is being spent and who works and how many people in each department. That is ridiculous. Again, giving you kind of this insight to the fact that there is an entity working behind all of this. If the Secretary of Defense can't find these things out, who's in charge of this stuff? I mean, that has to be just absolutely horrifying. But I think a lot of the viewers here are very well aware that there is, I mean, I don't even like the term deep state anymore because it's been hijacked intentionally to misrepresent what it means. But there's very clearly a shadow government or whatever you want to call it that's been talked about many times over, a grouping of interconnected people with their own agendas that all essentially drive towards main points, controlling this stuff behind the scenes, well outside of the authority of our supposed presidential cabinet. That's pretty scary concept to think about. So it's something that I want us to take away today and really, you know, not just consider, because I think, again, like a lot of you are well aware of this, but try to get this information out there to people and show them that the Secretary of Defense is not even able to control this stuff. So who's really in control of what's going on today? Now, one other thing I want to finish with today is just a small article that I thought was, you know, by no means is it top news and very important, but I found it to be a very interesting point. And it was simply from priceeconomics.com. It's entitled, it's called priceonomics.com. It's entitled, "How Much Money Do You Save by Cooking at Home?" And it made the simple point here that essentially people have been manipulating the thinking that, oh, I can go buy this 99-cent cheeseburger and save some money because it's super cheap. But the reality is that it's actually about five times more expensive to order food over, go out and buy fast food, than to simply go out and buy fresh vegetables and fruits and meats and cook for yourself. Something that we're slowly being conditioned away from. One more way that we're dependent on the establishment. And rather, you know, another way to pump us full of all of their chemicals and problematic aspects that it's a whole other conspiratorial discussion to have that I'm very proven many times over is very much part of the problem, whether it's about making us apathetic or overweight or any number of things that I think is absolutely part of the plan. What I'm seeing here is that it's very clearly dramatically more expensive to go out and buy these things we're conditioned to think are much more cheap. And it really shows us that it's all about coming back to this self-reliance, doing things for ourselves, finding ways to get outside of the control mechanisms that exist all around us in our society today. It really is all about making choices. Every moment of every day, every small choice made is either in support or in defiance of the terrible things we cover on a regular basis. From only shopping at co-ops and local farmers markets to making a conscious effort to lower your waste. From use of plastic to not succumbing to the conditioned need to go out and buy the new thing to replace the thing you still have that may be old but works just fine. The choice to not participate in and legitimize the broken and demonstrably corrupt system. The choice to stand up for your constitutionally outlined inherent rights, even the small ones, on a consistent basis. The choice to stop watching the mainstream media propaganda designed to foment the same hate and unrest that we see being created in countries overseas for the goal of regime change. They want us divided. They want us unorganized, uneducated, lazy, and apathetic, and fearful of stepping out of line. Make the choice to be better, to be decent and caring and compassionate for your neighbors, regardless of beliefs, both on your street and throughout the world. Make the choice to see past the divide being created all around us at all levels, and see the suffering being caused due to their tireless efforts, making us see those outside our borders as violent, problematic, or less than, as we fail to address the very military actions that caused their strife and allowed, even created, the extremism used as an excuse to deface, meddle, and subjugate, dating back well before the U.S. was even established, yet is still being carried out through its military power to this day, by the same groups making long-established choices that supersede and eclipse any farcical claims of democracy and U.S. patriotism. These choices, whether large or small, confront you every day. And every day, within every choice, you either choose to fight or choose to look the other way. So please, find the fight in you, and you may just be the one that turns the tide. For more information on the topics discussed, make sure you check out thelastamericanvagabond.com or any of the important independent sources in the show notes below. And as always, question everything. Come to your own conclusions. Stay vigilant.